we are privileged to have the parshas of Behar and Behukosai split up for us in order to allow for the Kriyas HaTorah jet lag, and therefore we have opportunity and occasion to consider each of these parshas as separate entities, although of course they are very much connected, so that when they come together, they are a unit, a composite unit of sorts, but certainly Parshas Behar deserves its own attention. The Parsha Behar is dominated by the mitzvah of Shmita and Yovel, related interests, and let us read and see if through the simple reading of the psukim, one or two basic questions may emerge. Perek Kaf He, the entirety of the parsha is one perek Kaf He, with the exception of two psukim. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe b'har Sinai lemor, darber b'nei Yisrael v'amartar lehem ki savo'u el ha'aretz asher ani nosein lachem v'shav sa'aretz Shabbos l'Hashem. Okay, so we are introduced to the concept of Shemitah. The pasuk proceeds: Sheishanim tizra sadecha, for 6 years you sow the field; v'sheishanim tizra kamecha, for 6 years you prune the vineyards; v'asafta es tevuasa, and gather in the harvest; uvashana hashviyis Shabbos Shabbos on yela arts, and in the 7th year a Shabbos, a super Shabbos really, for the land, Shabbos Hashem. Sodcha lo tizra v'charmecha lo tizmor. All of the above is off limits for Shemitah. And the opening question is quite simple. The surface reading of the psukim is most intriguing, for the entry of the Jewish people into Eretz Canaan is followed immediately by Shemitah. The impression almost is, as soon as you enter Eretz Canaan, Shemitah, year one, sabbatical. And then the psukim proceed to describe 6 years, which sound like 6 further years. Now, of course, none of this is the case. Shemitah is year number 7, it's not year number 1. And if that is so, then the question is, what exactly is Pasuk Beis doing? Pasuk Beis is introducing Shemitah, not in its time. Shemitah will come back in Pasuk Dalad, yes, in its time, and therefore Pasuk B seems to be neither here nor there. The run should have been when you come to Eretz Canaan, work the land for 6 years, and then the 7th year is Shemitah, which probably is how we would have paraphrased the psukim if we would forget to look inside. But Pasuk Beis is there, and the parsha does begin with Shemitah, even though that is certainly not the case sequentially. And this question, which is a very, as we said, a basic question, may be answered in a number of ways. To open up the idea of Shemitah itself, of course, it's one of those mitzvahs where it's much easier to understand, to engage in the enterprise of Tamei HaMitzvahs, reasons behind the mitzvahs, or things that derive from the mitzvah. The Torah itself characterizes the mitzvah of Shemitah and the concepts that are concomitant with that. And therefore, should we ask, you know, what is the Tamei HaMitzvah for Shemitah? So actually, they are twofold, interestingly. There is not one reason for Shemitah. At the very least, there are two that are obvious to the naked eye. Interestingly, one of them in the area of Ben Adam LaMokom, and one in the area of Ben Adam LaChaveiro. In the domain of Ben Adam LaMokom, of course, we understand it's all about recognition. Ki li ha'aretz, Shabbos Lashem. It's about recognizing that ultimately the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, as much as we need to be occupied with working the land, we cannot become preoccupied. As long as we need to invest in it, we cannot overinvest. And in a sense, that's the Shabbos of the years, as surely as the Sheish Yesimei HaMaisa. Once a week we need a day off, just to remember exactly, keep our perspective in terms of who is ultimately running things. That is largely the picture with regards to Shemitah as well. And therefore, it is very much that aspect of it, leaving off the land, is ben adam lamakom, its awareness as to who ultimately owns Eretz Yisrael. That said, there is also a very strong element of ben adam lachaveiro within Shemitah, because all the food is hefker. And therefore, it is absolutely a year of boundless tzedakah, whereby anyone can take from anywhere, and there are no restrictions, and what's mine is yours in the healthiest of ways. And a very, very significant injection of ben adam lachaveiro. And now what's fascinating is, the question is, and then what? Which is an interesting shaila, because one could imagine that after a successful Shemitah and a person's laid off the land for a year and he's declared his produce hefker for a year, and he's, one could almost get the feeling that he's been Yotze Zayin, his both has been Adam Lamokim and Ben Adam Lachaveiro, at least for another 6 years. As if to say, I've been doing this for a year, do not bother me until the next Shemitah. Which is very interesting, because really it opens up the question as to what is the relationship of the Shemitah year to the other 6 years? Shall we say that Shemitah year is a year which is an illegal on its own, which of course it is, but there's other 6 years, and never the twain shall meet. So we could almost say, Ma inyan Shemitah eitzel sheshes hashanim. They have nothing in common. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. The ideal is that all of the values that are instilled in this year-long, very intensive year of Ben Adam LaMokom, Ben Adam LaChaveiro, they need to set the tone for the next 6 years. Not to be motzeyu for the next 6 years. They need to empower. And even as you go back to the land, but remember, in terms of who the land belongs to, it's not that once in 7 years the land belongs, it's not a timeshare between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shemitah year, he owns it. From 6 out of 7, I own it. That's not a bad deal at all. But rather, the awareness of Shemitah needs to accompany us into the other years. And from this point of view, Shemitah has once again a great deal in common with Shabbos, because the same is true for Shabbos. Shabbos has a dual relationship with the 6 days of the week, in that although chronologically it is the end of the week, but conceptually it's the beginning of the week. That is to say, the messages of Shabbos are meant to set the tone for the week. It's a famous perush with regards to the words of the Gemara, everyone knows, Ilmole Shami Yisrael Shtei Shabbosos Miyad Hin Nigalim. If only the Jewish people would keep 2 Shabbosos, they'd be certainly on the way to Geula. So being Jewish, of course, we ask, you know, why 2? I mean, why isn't 1 good enough? And some Mefarshim say that really, 1 Shabbos is good enough. But a real Shabbos has to follow a real week. So you need the first Shabbos at the very least. Shabbos number 1 ensures that the week that follows will be a proper week. And then the Shabbos that follows that, that's the Shabbos that we're talking about. So from a certain point of view, Shabbos is the end of the week, sequentially, but ideologically, Shabbos is the beginning of the week. When one makes Havdalah, Mavda being Kodesh Lachol, it should launch one into the week, leaving nothing behind, in a sense, carrying with all of the perspective that Shabbos works its magic. That should accompany the Sheshes Yemei HaMaaseh. And therefore, it could be that this is the idea that's being communicated, whereby the Torah, when it wants to introduce the mitzvah of Shemitah, begins with Shemitah. Because Shemitah is both the beginning and the end, and the 6 years in between. It is both Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Dalet. It is mentioned before the whole thing gets going, even though, of course, it will not be year number 1, it's year number 7, but you need to be aware. The awareness of Shemitah needs to accompany you within the 6 years, and therefore it already receives a mention before the 6 years start. And then, in Pasuk Dalet, we finally get to the year of Shemitah as it takes its place in year number 7. So far, we have evaluated the mentioning of Shemitah before the 6 years in terms of the fact that the 6 years are meant to draw from the message of Shemitah from the outset. But from there, if we shift track slightly, we need to consult at this point the very well-known words of Rashi. This has to be one of the most often quoted Rashis, even though the part that we will quote is not yet Rashi, it's Rashi quoting the Torah's Kohanim, but nonetheless, Rashi was Kona Vishinoi Rishus, and now he owns the Torah's Kohanim, and it became Rashi. Bahar Sinai, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai. Rashi asks the question, Ma Inyan Shmita Etzel Har Sinai? Why is there a special association made by the Torah between Shmita and Har Sinai? Which there is, instead of the general and the expected Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Leimor, we have Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Bahar Sinai Leimor. Why the honorary mention? Rashi explains, after all, continuing the question, V'alo kol ha-mitzvahs ne'emru mi-Sinai, and all the mitzvahs are said at Sinai. Rather, says Rashi, Ma Shmita ne'emru kloloseha or protoseha v'diktu keho mi-Sinai, as surely as Shmita was given in the same way that Shmita was given with its general principles and its particulars and minutiae from Sinai, Afkulam ne'emru kloloseha v'diktu kehem mi-Sinai, so too all of the others. All of the other mitzvahs, says Rashi, Kach Shanui B'Toras Kohanim. Thus far, I've quoted from Toras Kohanim. Rashi proceeds to explain the Toras Kohanim, because actually the Toras Kohanim has made a leap that yet needs to be understood. Even if it's true that we can say that Shemitah was given in its entirety at Sinai, what about other mitzvahs? One yet needs to find out. And Rashi, that's really the balance of the Rashi, is to explain why the Toras Kohanim reaches the conclusion that it does. But for our purposes, we have already quoted enough of the Rashi, because everybody knows that Shmita Etzel Har Sinai is to tell you the moral of the story is, just like Shmita, all mitzvahs were given, Klolosehen, in general and particular, at Sinai. Now the Rashi is well known. What hopefully is also well known is that not everyone agrees with what Rashi just said. Because actually, he has opened up or touched upon a far-reaching machlokus amongst the greatest of the Tanoim, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. And what is their machlokus? They have a question how to understand the sequence of the transmission of the Torah. Certain things were given at Har Sinai, certain things in the Mishkan that they call the Ohel Moed. Something else happened just before we came into Eretz Canaan, Arvas Moav, the plains of Moav. What happened where? And on this there is the machlokus, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. The opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which is in line with Rashi, is, more correctly, Rashi is in line with Rabbi Akiva, is that everything was given at Sinai. Klalim upratim nemru mi-Sinai. General and particulars. What happened in the Mishkan? Vinishnu ba'ohel moed, were reviewed, said again, in Ohel Moed, Vinishtal Shu, and a third time in Arvos Moav. Some say it's the same thing three times over. The Netziv is more inclined to understand that it's a somewhat different type of learning each time. That's a separate discussion. But everything was given from the outset at Sinai. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yishmael, on the other hand, understands that no, there were certain things given at Sinai and certain things that were not given at Sinai. They were given in the Mishkan. Klolim, the general principles, nitnu b'Sinai. Protim, the particulars, ba'ohel moed. And then, v'nishnu, everything was repeated over ba'arvos moav. So if we can crystallize this machlokus into one sentence, we would say that for Rabbi Akiva, the general and particular was given at Sinai for all mitzvahs, and for Rabbi Yishmael, the general principles at Sinai, the particulars in ohel moed. And thus, now that we have this context, we look at the words of Rashi, the well-known words of Rashi at the beginning of Bahar, we understand that Rashi has taken a side in this machlokas. He has sided with Rabbi Akiva in identifying Shmita as representing all mitzvahs were given klalim uprotim. That being the case, the question beckons, how would Rabbi Yishmael relate to all of this? What would he make of all of this? Do we have to start again for Rabbi Yishmael, because we do not have at our disposal Rabbi Akiva's approach to answer it? Ma inyan shmita etzel har Sinai. Now, it could be that Rabbi Yishmael considers Shemitah to be an exception, perhaps, exception to the rule, but then we would need to ask why. And if he does not consider it exceptional to the rule, then the question is still there. What are we to make of this special mention between Har Sinai and Shemitah? So in brief, Rashi has explained Rabbi Akiva's approach. What about Rabbi Yishmael's approach? And the truth is, and if we are to ask the question thoroughly, Rabbi Akiva's approach has not entirely resolved the matter either, in the sense that there is still room to ask. Rabbi Akiva's job is done, but there is yet room to ponder. True as it is that Shemitah now, which was given all of its klalim and protim et sinai, so too other mitzvos, in principle, any of the 613 mitzvahs could have been used as the one that was about which it was stressed that it was given klalim uprotim, and then we would have made the presumption of equation with all of the other mitzvahs. Anyone could have been the av for the binyan av. Any one of them could have been the lighthouse which then illuminates the situation with the other 612, which is interesting because we go through the whole Rashi, and we know it, and hopefully we understand it. And Rashi asked the question, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai? Why is Shemitah connected to Har Sinai? And Rashi answered it. And when we, by the time we leave Rashi, we have another question, which is called, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai? It's the same words, but it's a different question. Why Shemitah of all mitzvahs? Which means that the essential connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai needs to be explained according to everyone, ultimately. And this question is addressed by the Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant. And he quotes a Medrash Vayikra Rabbah, which comments on a Pasuk in Tehillim. And the Pasuk states, Baruch Hu Hashem Malachov, Gibore Koach. And the question is, who are those Giborei Koach? Who are the mighty ones of strength that the Pasuk is referring to? Says the Medrash, Bama HaKosov Medaber, who are the Giborei Koach? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, B'Shomrei Shevius HaKosov Medaber. The Pasuk calls Giborei Koach those people that keep Shemitah. Shomrei Shevius. In other words, there is a great deal of respect going out from the Pasuk to people who keep Shemitah. How so? B'noach sheba olam. What is the way of the world? Adam osa mitzvah leyom echad. A person takes on a mitzvah, if he does it for one day, that's pretty good. L'shabbos echad. He keeps it up for a week, that's very good. L'chodesh echad, that's really exceptional. Shemitah is a year. Shema l'shaymos hashana. To embrace a mitzvah, a demanding mitzvah, for an entire year, that's something. And that is Shemitah. And the Medrash describes, he sees his field, the field that any other year he'd be cultivating, and this is his parnasa. For us, who are not of the agricultural ilk, so when we see a field, it's interesting for us. For him, it's his parnasa. If you would ask a person to leave their computer alone for a year, you'd find out what it means to keep Shemitah. So he sees his field, and it's just uncultivated, and what could have grown is whatever is happening is happening. That is a great madrega. And then, so far, Giborei Koach, absolute appreciation from this pasuk for Shomrei Shemitah. But the balance of the pasuk, Baruch Hu Hashem Malachav, Giborei Koach, says the Medrash, the pasuk continues, Osei Devaro, Lishmoa Bekol Devaro. They perform his word to hear his word. What does that mean? Rav Huna B'Shem Rav Acha Omar, B'Yisrael She'omdu Lefnei Har Sinai Akosav Medaber. That is referring to the Jewish people as they stood before Har Sinai. Shehikdimu Asiya Lishmiya. They preceded action before hearing or understanding. For Amru Kol Ashadiba Hashem Nasa V'Nishma. So the second half of that pasuk, the first half is talking about Shemitah, Giborei Koach. The second half is talking about Har Sinai, Osei Devaro, Lishmoa Bekol Devaro. That's Naseh before Nishma. So in a sense, we are well in place to ask the question, I mean, how do these two parts of the Pasuk connect to each other? Once again, Ma Inyan Shmita Etzel Har Sinai, that the Pasuk really has put them together. Except we understand that in order to keep Shmita properly, you need Sinai. You need Har Sinai. That is to say, there was a certain madrega that the Jewish people reached at Har Sinai, that our forefathers reached at Har Sinai. Naseh v'nishma represents an absolute commitment. It represents an absolute devotion, an absolute attachment. Now, of course, at Har Sinai, what's to stop them from saying Naseh v'nishma? I mean, with what, in terms of what they saw at Har Sinai, what else would they say? It was clear to them. The important yesod is that clarity of vision in terms of what their priority should be and who owns what and where the best of their kochah should be invested and all of these questions that they were so clear to them at Sinai can be tapped into later on. And that is the concept behind the mitzvah to remember Har Sinai, which is in Parshas Vayeshanah. Remember Har Sinai. Why is it so important to remember Har Sinai? Well, for so many reasons, but there was a certain level of clarity, of perception that was attained at Har Sinai, and you need to remember that sometimes in order to keep Torah so the way it should be kept. Because sometimes the Torah demands things of you. And then if you have no Sinai consciousness, you don't know what to make of it. You don't know where to start. The Torah seems to be demanding the impossible. But very often the difference between what's possible and impossible is really just a question of how you look at things, of what you see. It may be impossible for me to withdraw from my land for a year. That's virtually impossible. But it's not impossible for me to withdraw from someone else's land for a year. I'm very happy that they allowed me to be there for 6 years. The only question is, has my map changed? Has my vision changed? Do I come to look upon it ultimately as my land, in which case to detach for a year is demanding almost the impossible, or do I maintain that awareness that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's land, in which case I appreciate the 6 years and I gracefully withdraw in the 7th year? That's a question of perspective. And nothing more, or begins there, which is very interesting because ultimately it turns out that the ability to keep Shmita is not so much the repository of the power to keep Shmita, is not so much the in the heart, as if to say the resolve to keep Shmita. It's in the eyes. I mean, whose field do you see when you look at that field? If you see your field, you'll have a very long year. And if you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's field, so then you keep Shmita with grace. And this, in a sense, is the connection made by the Pasuk in Tehillim. Giborei Koach, without a doubt, not taking anything away. But there's a certain level that makes all of this possible. It's the Madrega of Naseh v'Nishma. When you see things with the map of Sinai, you look that way at Eretz Yisrael, that's what makes Shmita possible. And that, ultimately, is at least part of the answer, says Ber Yosef, according to everyone, as to why the Torah itself connected Sinai to Shmita. You'll need Sinai in order to keep Shmita. And with this in mind, perhaps we can understand from a different angle why the Torah introduced the 7-year cycle with Shmita, even though it's year number 7. Because you need to engage the first 6 years already with the consciousness of the 7th year. Because if it takes you 6 years to get attached to the land, then what will detach you in the 7th year? You need to engage from the outset with a Shmita awareness. And that's the perspective that should accompany you during those years. And that, says the Be'er Yosef, in his understanding, is what's behind the most unusual mitzvah. We're used to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, of course, you count the 7 days and the 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos. But there's another mitzvah of Sfira here, albeit it's on the Beis Din. It's mentioned in the singular, V'sofarto lecha, and therefore it refers to the unity of Klal Yisrael, represented by the Beis Din. But there is a mitzvah for them to count the Shemitah years and the Shemitah cycles. The V'sofarto lecha, Sheva Shabsel Shanim, Sheva Shanim, Sheva Pamim, etc., etc. Why is there a mitzvah to count? Are we afraid that they'll make a mistake? They won't make a mistake. Says the Be'er Yosef, the process of counting every year is not to make sure that you don't miss the Yovel. It's to make sure that you don't forget about the Yovel. It's not to make sure that you don't get mixed up in your cheshbon of the Shemitah. You'll remember. When the time comes, you'll remember. But you need to remember it every year. Because every year you need to engage in that year with, set against the backdrop of its place within the Shemitah cycle, that is to say, ultimately within the Shemitah perspective of things. So this isn't just another year of my field, it's the third year of the Shemitah cycle. It's a statement about even year number three. Ultimately, it's set against the Shemitah. Very similar to the mitzvah of Zachoris Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho, where it's a mitzvah to remember according to the Mechilta every day. When we say Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Shlishi B'Shabbos, you're fulfilling an aspect of the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos. Because Monday is different if it's Yom Sheni B'Shabbos as opposed to just another day until Shabbos happens. And then I'll react accordingly. So these are most pivotal sentiments with regards to the mitzvah of Shemitah. And again, very interestingly, drawn out from the simplest of questions. The mere fact that the Torah is putting Har Sinai together with Shemitah, and it's mentioning Shemitah before the 6 years, and these are the comments of the Gedolei HaMefarsh. Now, I'd like to focus, actually, on an aspect of the mitzvah of Shemitah, which is fascinating. And that is, we've mentioned it in passing, but to reflect on it for a few moments, that all Shemitah produce is hefker. It's very interesting. When Shemitah is kept, it's all hefker. You can't take it in as if you can't put it into your storehouse as if you own it. It's hefker. Now, it's important to realize that there are two corollaries of its status as hefker. That means two things. It means, of course, first and foremost, kol dichven yesev yechol, whoever wants can come and take, because that's what hefker means. That's number one. Okay, that we know. But it's also important to keep track of the fact that because it's hefker, there are certain mitzvahs that otherwise would apply to produce grown in Eretz Yisrael that do not apply. The mitzvah of taking trumas and maaseros only applies to produce that is owned by the one who grew it, sometimes by the one who bought it, but because Shemitah produce is hefker, therefore it is exempt from trumas or maaseros, which is very interesting, because Shemitah now becomes, in a sense, a double-edged sword. It has the status of Shemitah, so take care, because that brings with it many halachas. But on the other hand, you can eat all of it. You can receive it and eat it. If you did that during one of the other 6 years, you'd incur misa bidei shamayim for eating teva, which has that truma not taken from it. So that's a very important development. What's interesting is the mitzvah for Shemitah produce to be hefker is actually not based in Parshas Bahar. It's much earlier in the Torah, because although Parshas Bahar develops and discusses in detail klalim u'pratim, the mitzvah of Shemitah, but Shemitah actually has already been mentioned in the Torah. Parshas Mishpatim, there, in passing, so to speak, right, v'sheishanim tizra'a satzecha, v'asatas tevu'asa, right, for 6 years you work, uvashvi'is, and in the 7th year, tishmetena unetashta. That's Shmos, Perikav Gimel. Tishmetena, Shemitah, withdraw from the land, unetashta, and abandon it. And unetashta comes to refer to the mitzvah of Hefker. Okay. Now here, we should note, we have a most fundamental question, and we will see the implications of this question. For here we are saying that one of the mitzvahs of Shemitah is that all the produce is hefker, and that's part of the whole seventh year. The question is, when we say that Shemitah produce is hefker, what does that mean? It could mean one of two things. It could mean that the, one of the things that the Torah commands a person to do during the mitzvah of Shemitah is to render his produce hefker. It's one of the mitzvahs of Shemitah. Withdraw from the land and make your produce hefker. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, it could be that when the Torah says abandon the food as hefker, it's not telling you to make it hefker. The Torah has rendered it hefker. And therefore, the Torah is telling you, abandon it accordingly, because it's not yours. But the Torah doesn't need you to make it not yours. The Torah has made it not yours. And now, proceed accordingly. You can't take it because it's not yours. And should we ask the question that is on the tip of our tongue, L'may nafke mina, what difference does it make if the Torah tells you to make it hefker, the Torah makes it hefker? Well, the implications, the practical difference would be very simple. What if a person didn't make it hefker? There's always one. He didn't make it hefker. So now, what is the status of that food? What is the status of that person? And what's the status of that food? The status of that person is he's a bad person because he neglected to do a mitzvah. But the status of the food is it's his because he didn't make it hefker. Now, in violation of the Torah, he neglected to do the Torah mitzvah to make it hefker. But he didn't make it hefker. Which means if you would take it from him, you're a thief. He's a rasha, and you're a thief. It would also mean, pending having made it hefker, he can't eat from it without taking trumas and maaseros. Because that never went away. He has not done what he's meant to do. He's meant to make it hefker, which would then release it from trumas and maaseros. But he didn't. So if he didn't, so he can't both neglect his mitzvah and reap the benefits of as if it's hefker. You'll be fully obligated in trumas and maaseros. Whereas, of course, if we understand that the Torah has made it hefker, none of this will happen. He doesn't have the ability to own it, and it will instantly be, it's automatically hefker, and there will never be a requirement of trumas and maaseros or anything like that. That is the question. You have to make it hefker, or the Torah makes it hefker. And this question, we should know, was a historic dispute between two of the Gedolei Tzfat in the 1500s. They are Rabbi Yosef Karo, doesn't get any bigger than Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch, and his colleague on the Beis Din, the Mabit. The Mabit, Rabbi Moshe ben Yishai Mitrani, and they both lived in Tzfat, and they disputed this question for 28 years. It went through four Shemitah cycles, and they did not reach reconciliation. The only reason why the machlokas between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit stopped is because the Mabit passed away. And when he did, his son, the Maharit, took up his father's position and carried on the machlokas. According to Rabbi Yosef Karo, the person has to be mafkir. It's a mitzvah on the person. According to the Mabit, it is an automatic shift in status. The Torah has rendered it hefker. Now, what's fascinating is, why were they arguing about this so much? I mean, how much of a difference does it make already? Except the point is, it makes an enormous difference. And moreover, the irony is, as we'll see in just a moment, the Mabit, who was of the opinion that it's automatically hefker, was criticized as being overly lenient. And let's see exactly why that is. So what's fascinating is, of course, what came up many years later, hundreds of years later, the whole question of the Heter Mechira, in terms of navigating or circumventing the halachas of Shemitah. And what's interesting is, from a certain point of view, the underpinnings of that question already exist as long as Jews exist. In the land of Israel, specifically, you know, during the 1500s, where there was a yishuv in Tzfat, except one key point was reversed. For the Jews in Tzfat in the 1500s, they didn't own land. It was the non-Jews that owned the land. The Jews would purchase food from them. But they didn't even have the luxury of having to wonder whether they could sell the land. They didn't have any land to sell. They weren't farmers. It was their non-Jewish neighbors who were farmers. They owned the land. Which means that the pre-question, pardon the expression, is that if it's a non-Jew who owns the land, does the mitzvah hatluyas ba'aretz apply at all? Specifically, Shemitah. See, Trumas and Maaseros, even if a non-Jew owns the land, but if you purchase from him, you can come into an obligation of Trumas and Maaseros. So, but Shemitah, it's all about who owns the land. So, which is interesting, because what later on became the question as to, well, if you could sell them the land and then they would own it, then what? That was the question that they were already dealing with, because the non-Jew already owned the land. So the question is, when it comes to the seventh year, does his produce, right, that he grows, have the kedusha of Shemitah? And on that point, it's a separate point, but on that point there was also a machlokas between the same people, Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit. According to Rabbi Yosef Karo, if a non-Jew owns the land, there is no kedusha Shemitah. But the Mabit said, yes, there is. That's point number one. As we can appreciate, now actually that machlokas continues, but as we can appreciate, we're not going to get into the details of Heter Mechira any sooner than we need to, but the whole concept of Heter Mechira could only work according to the position of Rabbi Yosef Karo, namely that if a non-Jew owns the land, the produce will not have the status of Shemitah. According to the Mabit, you didn't change a thing. You sold the land, and it's still completely Shemitah produce, so nothing happened. The entire basis of the Heter Mechira is that it would make a difference, and that's only true for Rabbi Yosef Karo. It remains something of a machlokas. The Minhag Yerushalayim used to, and according to some still is, to consider non-Jewish owned produce to be exempt from Shemitah. Others are more machmir. That's number one. But the second question is that when the non-Jews grew produce in Shemitah, they would then sell it to their Jewish neighbors. And now the critical question is, let's say, just for argument's sake, let's say that the laws of Shemitah do apply. According to Rabbi Yosef Karo, they don't. And by the way, if they don't, then there's no reason why when you buy it, you should not be obligated instantly in Trumas and Maaseros. But let's say they do apply, like the Mabit says. However, says Rabbi Yosef Karo, remember one thing. The exemption, and here it comes out, the exemption of Shemitah produce from Trumas and Maaseros is because the owner of the field rendered it hefker. Do you think your non-Jewish neighbors made their produce hefker? Because it says so in Parshas Mishpatim? They didn't. And if they didn't, then there is nothing, and they're the only ones ultimately who can make it hefker, which they did not. So there is no reason in the world why there should not be an obligation of Trumas and Maaseros, even if it does have Shemitah status, as you are saying. And that is why the Mabit, and of course the response of the Mabit is, they don't have to make it Hefker. It's Hefker anyway. The Torah makes it Hefker. That's how it works. Which means when you put those two things together, says the Mabit, number one, even though it's non-Jewish owned land, it has a status of Shemitah. As soon as it has a status of Shemitah, the Torah instantly makes it Hefker, which means by the time you come to purchase it, you can eat the whole thing. There's no obligation of Trumas and Maaseros. Whereas Rabbi Yosef Karo considered that, and that's where the Mabit came off as being the lenient one. And that's ironic, because in our experience, if you consider non-Jewish produce to have Kedushas Shemitah, you're considered a Machmir. But there, he was considered a Mekel, because it was on the cheshbon of Trumas and Maaseros. That was the burning question there. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yosef Karo, he has to make it hefker. That's the mitzvah. But if he didn't, then even if it has Shemitah status, it will completely be obligated in Trumas and Maaseros. There is no license to eat it without separating Trumas and Maaseros. That was the machlokus which rocked Tzfat in the 1500s between the Shulchan Aruch and the Mabit. So the implications are very far-reaching. What's interesting is the Meshech Chochma gets involved here. And he has something interesting to say. He begins by referring us to a Toras Kohanim. And these are the words of Toras Kohanim. For the Pasuk says, once again, back to Pasuk Beis. Kisavo el ha'aretz asher anina sein lachem v'shav esah ha'aretz Shabbos Lashem. Now, says the Toras Kohanim, a comment that looks rather simple. Kishem she'ne'emar b'Shabbos Bereishis Shabbos Lashem. Just like Shabbos Bereishis, that is to say, Saturday, the seventh day of the week, the Torah calls it Shabbos Lashem. Kach ne'emar b'Shavias Shabbos Lashem. So too with Shemitah. That's it. Ad kan from the Toras Kohanim. And the question is, well, what does the Toras Kohanim mean to say? I mean, if I read the Chumash, I'll know that both of them say Shabbos Lashem. The point of the Toras Kohanim is obviously to equate something about Shemitah to Shabbos. And what is that thing? Says Meshech Chochma, as we know, of our special days, Mikroi Kodesh, so we have Shabbos on the one hand, and Yom Tov on the other hand. And each one has their Kedusha, but of course, there is a decisive difference between them. Namely, that the Kedusha of Shabbos is natural. It is latent within the Shabbos. It exists independent, as much as we say, Zachoris Yom HaShabbos LeKadsho, that may be to enhance the Kedusha of Shabbos, but the Kedusha of Shabbos is Kodosh, whether you like it or not. A person that does Malacha on Shabbos is in trouble, even if he didn't make Kiddush, because it's Shabbos. And the Beis Din have no power to say which day is Shabbos. It is what it is. Kaviyah v'kaima, that's the expression. It's already, it's there. Its status is standing already. Yom Tov, of course, as we know, is not that way. The Kedusha of Yom Tov derives from the status given to it by the Jewish people, specifically by the Beis Din. Kiddush HaChodesh. Every Yom Tov is based on Kiddush HaChodesh. Shabbos exists independent of Kiddush HaChodesh. That's why, when we conclude the central bracha on these days, so for Shabbos we say, Mekadesh HaShabbos. That's it. Hashem is Mekadesh HaShabbos. On Yom Tov we say, Mekadesh Yisrael VaHazmanim. And the Gemara says, that is still a sequence. In other words, Hashem is Mekadesh Yisrael, and they are Mekadesh VaHazmanim. That's the difference between them. And it certainly comes out when Yom Tov falls on Shabbos, because we split them up. Mekadesh HaShabbos v'Yisrael v'Azmanim. You really see that only the Yom Tov and the Kedusha draws from Yisrael. And therefore, says Meshech Chochma, it seems that what the Toras Kohanim is saying, I'm not sure whether he means to sign on this halachically, that one has to investigate further. But in terms of the Psukim and the Toras Kohanim, it seems that by identifying the Shemitah and equating it in this way, establishing that link or identifying that link between Shabbos Lashem of Shemitah and Shabbos Lashem of Shabbos Bereishis, says Meshech Chochma, that would seem to be in support of the Mabit, that the status of Shemitah and all that's involved is like Shabbos. It exists independent of whether or not you concur or bestow it. You just need to react accordingly to the reality that the Torah has established. And therefore this Toras Kohanim, just like Shabbos is Shabbos Lashem, it's all there. You don't make it Shabbos, so too Shemitah is Shabbos Lashem. Everything that's true of Shemitah is already there. What's interesting is that this is half of what the Meshech Chochma says. So far, he really seems to have placed himself between these two enormous authorities, Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit, and inclined to understand the Psukim like the Mabit. It's automatic. But we should note further, says Meshech Chochma, there's another mitzvah, a sister mitzvah to Shemitah in our Parsha, the mitzvah of Yova. Now, from a certain point of view, the mitzvah of Yovel has much in common with Shemitah, because everything that's true in Shemitah is true in Yovel, more or less. It's another Yovel. That's on the one hand. But it's also true that there is a great deal more. In other words, there is a mitzvah to revert property back to its original owners, a mitzvah to release avodim, right, even the eved nirtza, right, the eved who wants to stay forever, even forever, expires at a certain point, specifically the yovel. And what's fascinating is, we should note the following. Have a look at Pasuk Tes, as we begin to introduce Yovel. So Pasuk Ches is the count, and we've counted seven times, 49 years, Pasuk Tes. V'ha'avarto shofar tru'a b'chodesh ha'shvi'i. There's a mitzvah of blowing the shofar in the seventh month, not on Rosh Hashanah. There's a special mitzvah to blow the shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel. Some say the shofar that we blow on Motzei Yom Kippur is a zecher for the Yovel. We do it every year to remember it every year. We don't want to do it once every 50 years. That's the zecher aspect may be diluted somewhat. So, according to some, that's what's behind that. But what's fascinating is, so the Torah said, now it's Yovel. On Yom Kippur, blow the shofar. That begins with the Beis Din. Okay. Let's ask a shayla. What happens if they didn't blow the shofar on Yom Kippur? Is it still Yovel? Has Yovel happened? No one blew the shofar. Says the Gemara and the Rambam, no. It's not Yovel. The status of Yovel has to be bestowed upon that year by the Beis Din. And have a look at Pasuk Yud. V'kidashtem eshnasa chamishim shana. There is no mitzvah of v'kidashtem es hashmita. There is a mitzvah of v'kidashtem eshnasa chamishim shana. That is a Yom Tov sounding type of mitzvah. And the associations continue once again in Pasuk Yud Beis, the way Yovel is described, ki Yovel hi kodesh tiyelachem, like mikra kodesh yelachem. It has that association. So this is very interesting, because on this very point, says Meshech Chochma, whether or not the status of the year itself and things within that year is automatic, or dependent on the person to do it. On this very point, Shmita and Yovel, as similar as they are, they part ways. On this question. And we need to find out why. Why would it be so? Says Meshech Chochma, it seems to me that if we look at the institutions, the mitzvahs of Shabbos and Yom Tov, we will see that largely they're divided in terms of what they represent, what they're meant to bring into our consciousness. Shabbos is first and foremost about Briyasa Olam, Kisheshes Yomim, Asa Hashem, Asa Shemayim, Vesa Aretz, and Vayom HaShvi, Shavas Vayunofash. That's what Shabbos is about. Zeichu L'maisa Bereishis. Seventh day. Yomim Tovim, each one in their own way, some more overtly, some more obliquely, the Yomim Tovim or Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. They're all functions of Kedushas Yisrael. Some of them mark events of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and some of them mark the status of the Jewish people, which was only purely a function of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's interesting, by the way, even just in things that we say regularly to ponder them. We say in Kiddush, Shabbos, we say two things about Shabbos. We say it's Zikaron L'maaseh Bereishis. And then we say, Tchilah Mikra Kodesh, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. And many Mefarshim raise the question, well, how is Shabbos Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? Shabbos existed before Yetzias Mitzrayim. There doesn't seem to be anything we do on Shabbos to mark Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's independent. Lichura, that's how it would seem. Now, there are those Mefarshim who begin to explain how Shabbos is also Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. But we should know, the Ramban has already addressed this question. And the Ramban says the pshat in Kiddush is as follows. Shabbos kodesh ba'avar v'tonin chilonu. Hashem gave us the Shabbos. Zikaron l'maaseh bereishis. That's end of sentence one. Shabbos is zikaron l'maaseh bereishis. That's it. Now there's something else about Shabbos. Namely, it is tchila l'mikra e'kodesh. It is the basis of other mikra e'kodesh. Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, says Ramban, the words Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim are not yet a description of Shabbos. They are a description of the Mikra'i Kodesh, for which Shabbos is the Tchila of those Mikra'i Kodesh. In other words, in last week's Parsha, which was the Parsha of Mikra'i Kodesh, it was literally introduced that way. Mikra'i, Moedei Hashem, Mikra'i Kodesh, Elei Moedei. The first day to be mentioned is Shabbos. And then it goes back again to introduce Yom Tov. In other words, Shabbos, obviously, the faith in understanding of Bria Sa'olam is the basis of Jewish history, of course. And therefore, Shabbos is Tchila Mikra'i Kodesh, which are Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. But not to say that Shabbos is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the Ramban. And therefore, when we consider that the dominant theme, perhaps the exclusive theme, certainly the dominant theme of Shabbos is Maaseh Bereishis, as opposed to Yom Tov, which is Yetzias Mitzrayim. So let us now come and consider the mitzvahs of Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah is called explicitly by the Torah Shabbos Lashem. And it follows the template of working 6 years and then resting on the seventh year, which of course is a macro version of Shabbos itself. And Kili Haaretz, and that's what it's all about. In other words, as surely as the weekly Shabbos is a global Zeichel L'Maaseh Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation and control of the world, Shemitah is specifically that relationship as it applies to Eretz Yisrael. And what's fascinating is, according to the Malbim, the mitzvah of Shemitah not only parallels Shabbos, but actually is part of the mitzvah of Shabbos. And when it says Shabbos, V'shav Sa'aret, Shabbos Lashem, it's Shabbos even in the sense that we mean Shabbos, like the seventh day of the week. Now, of course, what does that mean? It doesn't happen every week. It happens once every 7 years. Says the Malbim, consider, the Torah has told us that on Shabbos, everything that we have needs to stop working for us, including ourselves, any servants that we have, our family, even children, our animals, as we say, right? Shecha abdecha b'maslo v'emtecha, everyone. Now, if that's true, it would stand to reason, says the Malbim, that if everything that we have should cease working for us to represent Shabbos, then so should our land. Except, of course, that doesn't have any meaning once a week, because what would that mean? You don't do anything, the things still continue to grow. However, says Malbim, that doesn't change the fact that there is an aspect of Shabbos that should devolve onto the land. Now to rest from the land once a week means nothing. But there is accumulation of Shabbosos. Because, of course, arithmetically, 1 year out of 7 years represents an entire year's worth of Shabbosos. And that's when finally the concept of Shabbos catches up with your land. But it is yet a branch of Shabbos. It's very interesting. And moreover, we should know that there exists an idea, just to see at Heichan Hadvarim Amurim, to what extent this concept is embedded, there exists an idea of Tosefes, that is to say, of inaugurating early and bringing out late, at which we are familiar with, of course, from Shabbos. We bring it on early on Friday, bring that later on Motzei Shabbos, add a little bit of time. And a parallel concept exists in Shemitah. There is a concept of Tosefes Shavias, whereby for a few days beforehand, we already stop, and for a short while afterwards as well. The very same idea. In fact, the truth of the matter is, if one would consult the Talmud in Maseches, Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Tes, we would see, to our surprise, that not only does the same idea exist in Shemitah, but actually, according to Rabbi Akiva, the very concept of Tosefes Shabbos for Saturday is actually derived from Shemitah. The source in the Torah for Tosefes is in Shemitah. And then by the way the Midas HaTorah Shehatorah Nedreshes when Rabbi Kiva then applies it to Shabbos at Kedei Kach. So it's no longer even a parallel. It actually becomes a makor, a source. So this is Shemitah, Shabbos, Zeichel Maaseh Bereishis. Yovel has it with the added element that all the slaves go free. And what's that all about? The Torah states explicitly, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim, avodayim. You have to let him go. Avodayim, why are the Jewish people avdei Hashem? Asher otzeis yosam me'eretz Mitzrayim. And therefore, the release of the Eved on Yovel is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. And thus we understand, says Meshech Chochma, I mean, this is his sweeping vision of Parshas Behar, that the difference or relationship between Shabbos and Yom Tov is absolutely contrasted or absolutely parallel by the contrast between Shemitah and Yovel. As surely as within those days, Shabbos is Zeichel Maaseh Bereishis and Yom Tov is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, so too in those years, Shemitah is Zeichel Maaseh Bereishis and Yovel is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. And because that is true, we see that Shemitah has Shabbos written all over it, and Yovel has Yom Tov written all over it. And now, says Meshech Chochma, you understand why, as much as when it comes to Shemitah, the Torah doesn't require you to do anything in order to bestow upon it the status of Shemitah, it's natural, that's like Shabbos. But when it comes to Yovel, you need to do it, because that's like Yom Tov. And that is his analysis of these, what started as a day, Yom Lashana, we could say Yom Lashana, in the most positive of senses. And the truth is, if we may end off where we started, this perhaps is another emanation of the concept of Shemitah Etzel HaSinai. That is to say, to preserve a Shemitah, a Sinai consciousness going into Shemitah. Because we've spoken about the fact that Shemitah produces Hefker. It's quite a thing to say. For a person to take their hard-earned harvest from their own land, what they're used to calling their own land, and all of a sudden to look with a benevolent eye on anyone who comes in, and whoever wants they may take, that requires not only a perspective on your relationship to the land, but we may say also your relationship to the people who are helping themselves to your food. Do you have anything in common with them? Are they complete strangers who are depriving you of your food? Or are we remembering the fact that ultimately the Jewish people are one people? And that's also reinforced by the communal nature of the hefgeris of food on Shemitah. It's about bringing the Jewish people together as well. And that is something that was also very much a hallmark of Matan Torah. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, said the Jewish people, as they're got ready, they were formatted to receive the Torah. Vayichan Sham, Rashi says famously, Ki Ish Echad Belev Echad. And the Be'er Yosef himself in Parshas Yisro noted that there are a number of mitzvahs in the Torah. You need to view yourself as one part of a large body called the Jewish people. Otherwise, many of the mitzvahs, Ben Adam Lachaveiro, will be lost on you. The demands of the Torah to have such a benevolent eye towards your fellow Jew, if you do not reach a point where you consider all of the Jewish people to be one, you couldn't acclimatize to it. You could not digest it. And therefore, another aspect of remembering Har Sinai, remember how you were at Har Sinai. Ki ish echad belev echad. You look to your left, you look to your right, you had only goodwill towards everyone else. You'll need that on Shemitah, because they're going to be going into your field and helping themselves to your food. Do you have that Sinai consciousness? If you do, you will emerge from Shemitah and go through Shemitah with flying colors. So these are some of the lessons in the absence of, well, depending to the greater or lesser degree that we're able to keep Shemitah nowadays. But Shemitah, the lessons of Shemitah are there as lighthouses for us. In other words, to filter also into the other 6 years. And the moral of the story is to preserve the awareness of Shemitah that holds us to an entirely higher order of behavior, an entirely different way of looking at things through the map of Sinai. And with that, we keep the Torah Mitzvah Hashem in the way that it demands of us with full understanding. Until next week.